No, but I mean, I have a good idea of how to open the episode up. I mean, it's going to be, since we're talking all about RPGs.
Right.
We should open it with like a really classic RPG song.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think of I can't think of too many right offhand. There's a lot of them, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff we're going to be talking about, but because we need a song, right, that everybody knows.
I know that.
But, no, wait, no, I know what you're thinking.
Wes, you better not play that song. You better not play that goddamn Final Fantasy song.
No, it is a Final Fantasy song, but it's not the one you're thinking of. Okay? I know what you're thinking, and it's not that one.
Don't trifle with me.
I'm not, dude. Okay. I'll put it in here, and then it'll go, and then
fine tune here.
All right, good. And people will hear it, and they'll be all excited because it's the RPG podcast, and it'll be good to go.
Make them nostalgic, and all right.
Yeah, it'll work, man. Okay, let's, here we go.
Stop it right now. I fucking told you not to play that goddamn Final Fantasy song, Wes, and you played it. You goddamn Gudugamesh loving weeaboo. God, this song makes me so angry.
I thought it was a good song.
You fucking thought wrong is what happened. You make people nostalgic. You're going to make people claw their ears out.
But it had like a squeedly guitar and everything.
Fuck that.
Yeah, you're right. That song is kind of dumb.
Just cue the battle music.
Yeah, we'll drop the real shit right now. Welcome everybody to the delicious RPG episode of Nitro Beard Radio.
We're talking Central. All RPGs, JRPGs, WRPGs, whatever kind of RPG you love it, we got it tonight.
We do got it tonight. And for those that do not know, I am your host, Mr. Wes Gardner, and I'm here with Mr. Brian Belita. Yeah, it's just us two for tonight.
Little intimate episode tonight. You know what I'm talking
about? That's right.
We got a little Barry White playing in the background. Yeah.
And see, I even got the voice because, like, I'm kind of ill. I've fallen on hard times with my allergies. And
with the chemical plant you work in.
Right. With all the... the bills won't pay themselves. All the sacrifices. That's like an RPG story.
Yeah, right. Man, that would be Wesley Gardner Chronicles. It starts off with Wes wakes up one morning and he's got a cold, but he has to go through so he can earn money to provide for his sick mother and overactive brother. And he goes to work and at the chemical plant, some kind of resonance cascade scenario happens.
But my brother, but my brother always achieved more than I did. So I always want to follow in his footsteps, but I'm going to be better than him one day.
I'm going to show him. Acknowledged.
I want to show the world that I'm not going to take it lying down.
And so you take it upon yourself to rid the world of all these monsters that have entered through a resonance cascade scenario through the chemical plant that you work in.
That's right. It's like goo. And the thing is,
all the characters are fucking flans or whatever they're called. Flan. You know the fucking blobby thing.
Yeah, I do. I was about to say all the like goo and stuff, but it's literally just me. Since it'll be live action, it'll seriously just be me just fighting mounds of.
It's gonna be a live action video game. Like it'll be, what was the old, like, Genesis game or whatever it was, like Night Watch or something.
Oh, yeah. Night Trap,
yeah. So you just have it all. It's almost like Choose Your Own Adventure. So it's all pre-recorded and, like, totally terribly done. Oh, but yeah. Then people get to choose and different stuff happens.
Well, there was a game like that called, I think it was called Spy Fox or something for the Sega CD. Yeah, yeah, there was so many of them.
The Sega what?
The Sega CD, son.
Man, I missed out on that.
Oh, it was horrible. You didn't miss much. it did have a great Sonic game. Like, I think that was the only thing. I think it had that in, like, a puzzle game. And that was it. Those are the only two actual games. It was, like, in the 3-2X that had that mosquito game. Man, I can't remember what it was called.
I wanted a 32X when I was young.
I did, too.
Yeah.
But... Why are we getting off track on RPGs?
RPGs.
RPGs, what is it? Well, okay, first, actually, before we get into what we've been playing, as far as RPGs are concerned, right before this episode started, I dropped the knowledge of the Carl's Jr., a Western $6 burger, and how good it was.
Why don't you give us a rundown from bottom to top of what this burger is made up of?
It's made of magic. I mean, that's the main ingredient, but... Let's see, you got... The burger's a big burger. Like, I'm not going to lie. The burger itself, I mean, whenever you hear what's on the burger, it sounds just, yeah, that sounds pretty good. But the size of the burger is obscene. Like, it is enough that your hands will not touch one another whenever you grip this burger. It's huge.
You have to double fist it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to, like, hold it with your feet. Like, you have the... It's like a... It's like a koala bear climbing up a tree.
When you go to Carl's Jr.'s, they provide you with a device specifically designed for holding this burger.
Yeah, they give you a wheelbarrow that they put the burger in and wheel it towards your table. But it's a giant burger, and it has just a general hamburger and then a lot of bacon. And I mean, the burger is literally big enough that there could be side by side 5 full strips of bacon, like massive strips of bacon. And then you have onion rings. And I mean, this thing can hold 3 full onion rings, not like the dinky, you know, diner onion rings, but I'm talking like the greasy ass bowling alley onion rings.
I know what you're talking about.
You know, yeah, they're like crispy.
A bracelet.
Or a necklace. Yeah. It's just fried magic. And then they put it on there. And then it's just covered, slathered in barbecue sauce. Like, just completely drenched in barbecue. It's almost like they dipped the burger underwater, but the water was barbecue sauce.
Yeah, so basically before this, Wes was telling me that I should have one of those because apparently he wants me to have a heart attack.
That's true. No, but for real, after you eat one, you do feel kind of sluggish for the rest of the day. Like, you think it's a good idea, and you're like, man, I'm gonna eat the whole thing. And you do eat the whole thing, and then you completely regret it for, like, 2 days following. But...
Oh, man.
Because, see, since I'm feeling under the weather, that's what I wanted. It's like my comfort food. So just a giant effing burger.
So here's the question. When you get that, and you have that burger in front of you, can you take it home and play whatever it is you've been playing? Can you do both at the same time, or is it just two of them?
I don't know. Because basically what I've been playing is a DS game. So, I mean...
Yeah, you probably know. I wouldn't.
You know what I'm saying? Unless I get a... you know those horse muzzles? That they...
Yeah, feedback.
You just shove the burger in there, and like you would caddy it, like caddy corner it inside of it, so it would stay as a burger. You wouldn't have to mush it up.
Right.
Because if you mush it up, it loses the. Tastes nasty.
Nobody wants to eat a burger milkshake.
Yeah, that's dumb. It just completely defeats the purpose. So it is dumb. But no, I'd wear it, and then I played my DS.
And what are you playing on that DS, Wes?
I am playing some Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Echoes of Time. That's right. This is my first foray into the Crystal Chronicles line. I mean, I've never played them before.
Yeah.
But I'm a huge fan of hack and slash games.
I've played for a while, like the last year, myself and Jan Turiu on the platformers and a couple others. We were just looking for one, and we were tearing up Titan Quest left and right.
Oh yes,
yeah. Really good, and you can get it super cheap on Steam now. But yeah, that's mainly. I've been kind of looking for another one, especially with Diablo 3 coming out. So,
yep.
I know I'm getting it on my birthday coming up.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I already know I'm excited for it, but I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, since it is my first foray into the whole Crystal Chronicles line of things, I don't know how much it differs from other ones in the series.
Yeah.
I don't know how it differs from like the GameCube or the other DS one that came out. But so far, I'm really enjoying it. But there's a few things that, you know, I think I put it up to the fact that I was grown on Diablo, like Diablo and Diablo 2,
yeah.
And then Titan Quest later. So, I mean, since we both played Titan Quest, I could try to relate it to that a little bit. I'm probably 7 or 8 hours in to Crystal Chronicles, and something tells me I've just scratched the surface.
Yeah.
But the thing is, from at the point that I'm at right now, it seems like the surface is kind of... This might not make sense, but I'll try to explain it better. The surface seems kind of shallow. It doesn't seem like there's actually a lot to the game.
Like as far as the gameplay, like character development. I mean, as far as like building your character, story wise, or how do you mean?
A little everything. I mean, this really does feel like action RPG light.
Hmm.
It feels kind of. Which, I mean, I can attest to it being a handheld game. You know, I really wouldn't want something as in-depth as a Titan Quest on a handheld. Like, wouldn't...
You're just looking for a pick-up and play on the go.
Right, exactly. And if that's what you want, like a quick hack-and-slash, like an action RPG where you can definitely get the fulfillment of, you know, getting fat loot.
Yes.
Yeah, that's definitely rewarding. I mean, it's still that same kind of addictive... I'm just going to fight two or three more guys because I want to see what they drop.
Right.
I mean, if you're a big fan of that type of mentality, then you'll love it. You'll absolutely love it.
As far as you've played now, is there a good amount of, you know, fucking crazy, you know, special loot amongst, you know, the generic loot that you'll pick up all the time?
Not really, but the reason why is because you have to play through the game on normal mode first.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can do a new game plus on harder difficulties.
Okay, so it's kind of like Titan Quest in that aspect, so that's cool.
Exactly. And then, of course, whenever you go to the higher difficulties, you get better armor sets,
right.
You get better weapons. Huh. And that's absolutely true. The cool thing about Crystal Chronicles so far, though, and it's something that I really enjoy, is it rewards you for using stuff that you're good at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I have a broadsword. And my broadsword, I got it at like level 2. I'm level 11 or 12 now. But I still have that broadsword from level 2 because it levels up with me.
Oh,
the more I use like special abilities that use the sword, and the more I upgrade, you know, my power and things like that whenever I level up, the sword levels up with me.
Well, that's a handy feature.
Yeah, so it definitely makes sense that you would want to keep equipment that you feel comfortable in. Because... You're just going to get it better and better. The only thing that you would really have to do as far as upgrading would be, let's say you pick up another style of sword, and it may have less initial stats,
mm-hmm.
but it could have a few sockets. You know, kind of like in Diablo, rather.
Yeah.
I can't remember if they had any socketed items in Titan Quest or not, where you could put like jewels.
You could like apply relics, like you could pick
that's right
applied into the weapons. Yeah,
that's right. Okay, so think of it very much like that, in the fact that you can pick up additional, you know, relics. I can't remember what they're called in Echoes of Time by chance.
Yeah,
but it's very much that same thing where you can up. Yeah, exactly. Where you can upgrade your weapons or even your armor sets with certain abilities. And it does sort of work like a rudimentary materia system from Final Fantasy VII, to where you can, okay, I'm going to make my armor have great defense against fire.
And can you like swap that out as you please? Because I know in Titan Quest you apply it and it's pretty much bound to the weapon. I mean, you could like spend a lot to unbind it so you can, you know, put on a different one. But is this one kind of like hot swappable?
I believe so. I believe it depends on what armor you have, because on some of the more rare armors, I think you only have one shot. But there's so many times that like it kind of has the Grand Theft Auto syndrome. You know, in Grand Theft Auto, whenever you steal a car, all you see is that car.
Which time?
Well, I mean, just in general, because I guess it's like a memory limitation of the Grand Theft Auto games. But let's say you're trying to find a motorcycle and you cannot find one. But the moment you find one, all of a sudden they're all across the goddamn city.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that same type of mentality. So, I'm not entirely sure if you can swap out relics and stuff on the fly into your armor.
Right.
But like the fact that you're
fighting a fire guy and then you go fight an ice guy or whatever.
Right. In that regard, something that's really cool is your magic is so easy to use. You start off with all of your magic skills at the very beginning.
Cool.
So you have your cures, you have your, fire, blizzard, thunder, stuff like that. And you can either do it with a touch screen or you can hold down the right trigger and then press a directional pad and it'll cycle through.
That's what I was about to ask. I was going to ask how the controls were, if it uses, you know, only the buttons or if in combination with the touch screen, if there's anything that needs the touch screen or what.
I honestly don't use the touch screen. I mean, you can use it, and for a few people, I mean, for some people out there, it may be really helpful for them to be able to use it just because it is kind of nice to be able to kind of click down on something instead of having to hold down a few buttons to go through like an inventory or things like that.
Right.
But overall it plays really well. The only thing I'm trying to get used to is, since I'm so used to controlling RPGs with an analog stick, you know, with playing with like the 360 and PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 2 and stuff, it's very bizarre going back to an RPG using a directional pad.
A D-pad, yeah.
Yeah, because there's so much platforming.
You can only walk in 8 directions.
Exactly. And it's bizarre because a lot of the environments are set up in, you know, about double that. I mean, it's full 360 degrees.
Yeah.
So whenever you're bound to 8 directions, it feels clunky, but it's not clunky.
Right.
Like, it's one of the, there's definitely a learning curve to it.
You just kind of feel a little limited in a couple aspects.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, but overall, I'm really enjoying it. And it is filling that need of, okay, I want a very, very good game that has instant gratification that I can play for 15 to 20 minutes at a time, still get something out of it. Or I can actually sit down and have a 3 or 4 hour marathon session and get a lot accomplished.
Right, right.
So it's definitely rewarding in that regard. And I mean, it fits really well with a handheld, and I do recommend it simply because the music is great. It's very different than other Final Fantasies. I guess the whole Crystal Chronicles line kind of has a
more of an
ethnic flair, I guess you would say. I mean, there's like bagpipes and
right.
Things like, it's more than just the orchestral, you know, like ridiculous, you know.
You piece of shit.
You shut that garbage up. But yeah, I mean, so it definitely has its own unique atmosphere. It definitely feels like you're going into a different world whenever you go into.
Excellent. That's good.
You know. So I think you'll really enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. My birthday is coming up and I've got that on my list. So I should be getting that, and that'll be fun because I think my friend who I played Resident Evil 5 with and we co-op, we'll probably do some co-op in that.
Oh, yeah. And since it's online, we can set up the online stuff and test that out.
Yeah, definitely. I
played online with a random pickup game. I played just one thing, and the lag was so bad.
Can you even communicate?
It's sort of like, have you played Phantasy Star Online by chance?
I played Blue Burst.
Blue Burst, yeah.
I played that for a while with a couple of the platform guys.
Yeah. you know how you can, there are the set phrases that you can be like, over this way, guys. Yeah. And then whenever you hit the button, it just displays it up. That's exactly how it's used.
Okay.
In this. So, I mean, you can use your touchscreen for the communication. The only thing is, whenever you go online, some of the stuff gets really clunky. Like, it just gets really, because everything's smashed in there, so your communication's on this side of the screen, and this is over on here, so everything's really cramped, and whenever you have a tiny, tiny screen, anything being cramped is always a bad, you know, a bad time.
Yeah, so it's functional, but, you know, in true Nintendo fashion, they don't want to allow people to type, like, shit balls of Hyman cock.
Yeah, that's where do you live, little Nancy? Yeah. I want to come pick you up in my van.
I mean, as long as it works.
Yeah, it does, and it does. I just want to figure out, maybe I can do some port forwarding or something on my router and try to get better speeds that way. But yeah, the time that I did go online and play, it was pretty laggy. I mean, there was honestly a solid second and a half delay into me hitting a button and something going on.
Yeah, I'll have to, because right now my wireless network is set up as WPA, and I know the DS Lite cannot do that. Right. It can only do web, so I'll have to, like, downgrade my security, but I don't think that'll be too much of an issue.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah, well, I'm definitely looking forward to that, because, you know, I stopped playing Titan Quest a while ago, and I need some just hack-and-slash loot-fest games to tie over until Diablo 3.
Yeah, absolutely. And just don't go into it thinking that it will be the replacement for Titan Quest, because it's not nearly that deep.
Yeah.
But this is something that, it is becoming one of my favorite DS games. Like, whenever I feel like, hey, I want to play a handheld, I think, okay, yeah, I can do this because I can get a lot accomplished.
Yeah, well, that and the whole new game plus thing provides a ton of replay value, because I know, you know, Yantar, you and I, we played through Titan Quest God knows how many times through all the difficulties and, you know, different characters and stuff, so.
Absolutely. But what have you been playing before I kind of go off on my machinima tangent?
Nothing new. Not too much new anyways. Still dabbling in Spelunky. I finally made it to, like, the third area, which is a nice area. And I got, like, immediately died. I got in. I was like, yeah, I got a jetpack. I'm flying around. And I threw a flare, which I was carrying at, like, a flying spaceship, and it exploded and killed me. And that game is so, it's so rewarding, but goddamn is it punishing as well. And I can't remember if I mentioned this, but I've been playing that, and I've been playing Rogue Touch on my iPhone, just to kind of prepare myself for the punishment that I'll get when I get Demon Souls in the mail for the PlayStation 3, so that should be pretty fun. But let's see, the newest thing I finally hooked up and turned on my Wii the other day, just yesterday actually. And I looked through the little calendar of notes, and the last time I had played anything was May 2008. So, almost a full year ago.
Tyler's going to be so mad.
I know, he's going to be so mad at me because I still haven't played Lost Winds. I don't know. The one thing that always pisses me off is, like, just give me a dollar value. Don't give me, like, Nintendo points or.
Yeah. It's the carnival way of, the 8 hot dogs and 6 hot dog buns. Yeah. Like, I hate that pricing structure. I hate it.
Yeah. I mean, it really shouldn't be a barrier, but there's just, I don't know. I've talked about the Wii before, but anyway, so I turned on my Wii and, actually the guy that I co-opted Resident Evil 5 with, my friend Ben, we loaded up and started playing through Resident Evil Umbrella Chronicles, so that's been pretty fun. Because
is it pretty good? Because I mean, I've seen footage on it, and then really, whenever I see Resident Evil, and then it does not have a number,
right?
Like, it's not a quote unquote legitimate piece of the, you know, story canon or whatever. I immediately disregard it.
It totally is. I mean, it's called Umbrella Chronicles because it actually, you kind of play sections as a rail shooter of the weaving story that has already passed in Resident Evil. So you play, like, through that first mansion as not buff and roided out Chris and
as big McLarge huge.
As big face McLarge huge. So you play as him and Jill going through that first mansion a bit, when you first meet up and, you know, hang out with good Wesker. So it's actually, it's not like its own story. it just pulls bits of story from all the other storyline that has happened in the Resident Evil universe, and you play those as rail shooters.
That's pretty cool. That's actually a pretty cool idea.
It is pretty cool because they have that, you know, that first dramatic scene of the first zombie eating the guy in the mansion that like turns around and looks at you, the cover of Resident Evil 1. So it's a rail shooter. And I was mainly just waiting to play because I did want to do a co-op, you know, just because it's a lot more fun that way. So we went through like the first kind of file. And then a little extra, but yeah, it's really fun. I know I'm kind of late to the party on it, but I'm super enjoying it.
Yeah, does it only go through the first Resident Evil, or does it kind of, does it sprinkle bits of other stories as well?
I'm gonna look that up right now, cause I'm not totally sure. Right now it's just done, the first, I'm pretty sure just the first one, but let me see. Goes through Resident Evil 0, the first Resident Evil, Resident Evil 3, Nemesis, and I think that's it. That's at least all that.
That's still a pretty big load. That's a lot of story.
Yeah, and I imagine Resident Evil 2 as well. So basically from Resident Evil 0 through 3. So it's got quite a lot in there.
Absolutely.
And other than that, really not much. Still trying to get GTA 4 off my plate. And I think I'm almost there, even though I'm sure when I'm done, I'm still going to be tooling around in multiplayer mode and, you know, shooting stunts and whatnot.
Oh yeah. And once I get my PC upgrade, man, we're going to play online and then make some movies.
Heck yes, man. That'll be fun.
For sure. We'll do that. But yeah. And then speaking of the making the movies, that's kind of what I've been doing. I mean, I've only really played Crystal Chronicles simply because the project on my plate right now is I've always wanted to make a machinima. And for those that do not know what machinima is, I mean, we kind of touched on a little bit of it last week, but a machinima is just making a video or a film using a game engine. And like a professional example of it would be all of the Metal Gear series. That's how they make their stuff. It's all in-game models. It's all in-game textures. It's not a separate, like, movie file.
Yeah.
It's all in the engine going on right there. So
yeah, although I think, I guess, to be more specific, I think Machinima kind of directly applies to kind of fan-made stuff.
That is true.
I think probably the most well-known one would probably be Red versus Blue.
Yeah, absolutely. Red versus Blue, and I've been trying a lot of different engines. Like, I was trying the Source engine for Half-Life, and I was trying the Unreal engine for, you know, Unreal Tech. And then I was trying all these
cubes of meat rolling around.
Yes, that's my film. And it was called Meatballs.
Meat. Cube Balls.
Cube Balls of Meat, Part 2, The Redux. With, like, epic sweeping Harry Gregson Williams music. But like, I was trying all these different engines, and I was like, damn, man, I want to make movies. I just want to do something. I want to make something with some epic music just for shits and giggles. I just want to kind of get that inner director out. Cause yeah. I mean, I've done the film school thing. I'm like, okay, I do have stuff I would like to say, but I just don't know if I could ever afford a big sci-fi budget and all this other stuff. So I'm like,
you got creative juices flowing.
Right, exactly. And so I'm like, I might dabble in this. And then I was going through all these different game engines, and everything was so elaborate, and it's good because you have complete control over what goes on. But as a one-man deal, there's no way. Like, there's no way I could code all the scripting for all the characters in Half-Life in order for the camera to catch a certain... There's no way. Like, it would take years. Yeah, and I actually have tried Gary's mod, and they made it a lot easier with that.
But it's there's only so much you can do.
Exactly. There's still a pretty big barrier to entry. And so I was like, God, you know, I was getting frustrated. I'm like, man, I want to make something, and it's just been nagging at me for months and months now. So I'm like, I'll think of something. And then I started watching more Halo Machinima. And I was like, Halo 3 has a theater mode. It has Forge, and it has a replay system that basically I can save any of my games, go back at any time, and all of it is there exactly the same.
Yeah, well, I mean, that, and I mean, just from some of the tools that you mentioned, and I know some of the links that you sent me of some machinima created in Halo, I mean, it's, you can do some pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah, you need to think outside the box, because the only bad thing about Red versus Blue is whenever people make Halo machinima, they want to make Red versus Blue.
Yeah.
Like, they just go completely after it, and it's always some, you know, 12-year-olds that seriously just...
Puma
jets. Yeah, well, exactly. It's like, I got the sniper rifle. And then, basically, it's all the narpigs of the world trying to make a...
You rascal rabbit.
You get back here! But, but, you know, so it's always unwatchable. But I made a promise to myself. I was like, okay... This film that I'm making, and I already got all the footage. Now I just get to go into Premiere this weekend and edit it all together and try to get it hosted on Machinima.com. That's my goal, is to get it hosted on the official Machinima.com site.
Do they like screen stuff? Do they pick
it? Yes, they do.
Or is it like YouTube where anyone can make an account?
Anyone can make an account, but they have to screen the material. And the reason why they have to screen the material is because once you give it to Machinima.com, they have a license agreement that they're allowed to use any part of your footage for anything.
Right.
So let's say, you know, if all my dreams came true, that my movie was a big hit. And it got a lot of publicity, and a lot of people came to Machinima.com to watch that movie. Well, if Machinima.com wanted to make an advertisement for, let's say, YouTube, or, you know, if they did some stuff with, like, let's say, Revision 3, they would have the license agreement to use part of my movie in their advertisement.
Okay.
So they have to screen it, and they don't necessarily screen it.
That is neat that they do, because then you kind of know, you know, whenever you go to machinima.com, you'll be getting some good stuff.
Yeah, sometimes. Like, I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't recommend going and looking at anything in the comedy section, unless it is well rated. Like, and the well-rated, it's really hilarious, because you can always tell the stuff that's the best on Machinima.com, because, you know, some movies will have, like, 20 views, 30 views,
right.
And then the ones that have the 5 stars have, like, 495,000 views, right. And you're like, oh, okay, you know, maybe this one will be a safe bet, and they usually are. I mean, they get a lot of, you know, fans for a reason, but, you know, I've just been kind of playing around with that, and that engine, I'm not the world's biggest Halo fan, like, my opinion on Halo aside, engine and the tools that they give you in Halo 3 are phenomenal for making movies.
Absolutely. Like,
and, I mean, the great thing about it is the whole replay system, and I'm kind of hoping that Grand Theft Auto does this in some regard. Yeah. I know with Grand Theft Auto you can do the replay of, like, the past minute or 45 seconds, but I'm hoping there's a way that, like, I can do, because Halo's starting to spoil me in this regard.
You can record an entire, you know, match or round or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. An entire play session. And then you can constantly watch it again in theater mode while you control the camera. And what that does is your continuity is perfect every time.
Yeah.
Because you have the same stuff every time. Like, it's not like shooting a real film to where someday, you know, an actor may be wearing a blue bow tie instead of a black one. And then your continuity's all screwed up. Everything's identical, like, to the pixel. So you can get multiple kick-ass shots of stuff, you can do slow motion, you can do all this other stuff, because it never changes. But, I'm trying to just work with that until I get a PC good enough for Grand Theft Auto 4, so it's kind of like a practice deal, because the movie ideas that I have in mind fit more alongside Grand Theft Auto.
Cool.
Like, it's more of people getting into cars, or people shooting guns while they're, you know.
You're taken out of the Halo universe and put into a, you know, a realistic universe, which provides itself to more options other than, you know, it's Halo people in a different scenario.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's a bad limitation with, and this is kind of why I fretted using Halo. You can either have a gun, or you can have a gun that's not pointed up.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't really, epic dramatic storytelling is not something you can do in Halo Machinima. You just can't do it. I mean, if your voice acting's good, you can sell it, okay. I mean, you can do the big, you know, raspy hero voice, like, I don't know when I'm coming back. But, you know, I mean, you can do stuff like that. And the big sweeping music, and you can kind of fake it. Yeah. Tell my mom I said goodbye. And then, like, do whatever. But with Grand Theft Auto, since it's people, you automatically relate to it better.
Yeah.
Like, there's just something about it. Okay, it's another, even though they're fake people, it's a human being or something that walks, right, at least, like a human being.
In a realistic environment.
Yeah, exactly, with real physics and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's more relatable, and that's why I'm really excited to see it, because some of that stuff on the Social Club TV that Rockstar has up, some of that stuff is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking Slumdog Millionaire good. I was like, oh my god. Well, like, this stuff was shot so well.
I love the one that you sent me of basically just people getting into accidents and flying through. Well, it wasn't even that. You don't even see that. You just saw basically Niko Bellic's ragdoll body flying through the air.
And oh, yeah. It was
3 minutes of that.
Yeah, it's called Icarus in The God of Flight.
Yeah.
And it was actually for, like, a competition that Rockstar had to make the best 1 minute machinima. And he made like a 3 minute version of it. And it's great because with the physics and the shots are really well done of literally people flying through the air. It looks like they're flying.
Yeah. It's just really artsy. You know, I mean, I know it sounds dumb, you know, call like, you know, ragdoll people flying through the air in a video game artsy, but you know, it kind of is.
The shots are really well done and it's really scoped out really well. And it's just a lot of fun. I mean, you get to see stuff like that, and it starts giving other people ideas.
Yeah.
And that whole network of people, it's really cool, and that's kind of why I want to get into it. It's kind of say, okay, I love game engines and I love playing games, but I want to see what else they can do. I want to see what other kind of stuff we can do with a game engine that's still entertaining, but not necessarily interactive.
Right.
So, it's just a cool prospect.
I'm really glad that it seems like a lot of games are kind of adding that in there. I mean, before, you know, you had to use traps if you wanted to make a GTA, you know, San Andreas or GTA, you know, Vice City stunt video. And, you know, if you fuck up, that's 500 megabytes down the drain.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, which isn't a big deal, but it's annoying. But with this, you know, especially with Halo, you know, you can record the entire MASH demo. And in GTA, you can, you know, you do something awesome, then you record it. And, you know, they've got the editing tools in there and stuff. So it's really neat that they're kind of embracing the whole user-created content or user spoofs and whatnot kind of idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually a kind of a good point to go into our break because whenever we come back, let's see, what do we want to do after the break? Do we want to talk about our favorite RPGs, or do we want to talk about kind of where we think RPGs are headed? Like, which one should we do first, do you think?
We'll talk about like our favorite, or just, you know, just some brief mention of some good RPGs that we've enjoyed.
Yeah, sounds good. All right. We will, I think for this break, we'll do some Wild Arms.
All right, cool. So this isn't going to be in, right? Are we still live?
Yes, this part is. I was just telling people that we're going to have some Wild Arms.
We're going to bust into the break with some pretty badass Wild Arms music. And
it is really,
I know both Wes and Matt love us the Wild Arms soundtrack, so.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy. Thank you.
All right, everybody, welcome back. You just heard some... We didn't hear that song. We heard a Wild Arms song.
I don't know. Oh, you might be editing the show later and just be like, oh, I'm going to make Brian sound like a dumbass. He's all like, yeah, listen to this Wild Arms song. And then it's just going to go,
that would be, or I, oh shit, I could have Rickrolled everybody. I could have Rickrolled everybody.
Yo, you got one big angel, son.
Yeah, that's going to be the new meme. We're going to start doing that on the forums. We should start doing that on the forums.
Yeah.
Just make links like, oh, it seems the Braves lost their first baseball game, and then people click on it, it's a one-wing angel, and they're like, what the hell is this?
One-wing angel set over, like, video of some random baseball game.
For the Braves logo. You know, on YouTube, whenever they just have one fucking picture or something and play, like, a 30-minute song, and you're like, please show me something else. Oh, man. Okay, this second segment, we're talking about our favorite RPGs. And I think both of our primary games that we want to talk about all came from the PlayStation
era. Yeah, we're mostly concentrating, I think, mainly because of our memory on somewhat recent RPGs. So.
Yeah. I mean, these are still about a decade old.
Yeah.
I mean, these are still, you know, games, the latest ones are from like 2001 or 2. So, I mean, these are still pretty old games. I mean, some of them date back to like 1996. But, a majority of them are, you know, like PS1 titles. And I think PlayStation 1 was, I don't know if it's just our age generation that this is the reason why, but it seems like because of, you know, Final Fantasy VII, that the RPG floodgate literally smashed open for the PlayStation.
Yeah, the PlayStation like, was a pretty great system if you're looking for some good RPGs.
And I'm just trying to think of all, like we put a list in the little chat room before we started recording so we could have something to go off of, but there's still just so many that we go off of. I think the most underappreciated PlayStation 1 RPGs, but it's one of the most classic, has to be Breath of Fire 3. And the reason why I love Breath of Fire 3 so much is, I mean, the music has this nice jazz flavor, and it has what I like to call the Capcom charm. You know, back in the day, even in, you know, 16-bit era, whenever you got a Capcom game, there was something inherently, like, it was not quite on the same level as a Nintendo game, but you knew you were getting something kick-ass. Like, no matter what it was, anytime I would see Capcom on a box, it was just, I knew I was going to get something quality. Like, it would probably be difficult, but I knew it was going to be good. And with Breath of Fire 3, I remember I never played Breath of Fire 1 or 2 for the Super Nintendo. I mean, I was a Genesis kid growing up, so
me too.
I didn't really get into like Final Fantasy 3 and stuff like that, or Chrono Trigger, until much later. But I remember Breath of Fire 3 because I was at I think it was an old electronics boutique before it was called EB Games, and it was still had the full big ass name. And they were still selling the PlayStation 1 games, and the cover of it is pretty striking. I mean, you look at it and, you know, it says Breath of Fire 3, and it just has a dragon eye and then like fire surrounding it. And I was like, oh shit, this is awesome. And then I just looked at it at the back of it, and it had some cool character art. I think on the back it has Teepo, one of the main characters, and then Rey, who is another one of the main characters. But it had that, and then it had some cool graphics, and it kind of had that top-down isometric, like 2.5D, I guess you would say. Like, they're very rudimentary 3D as far as like buildings go. Yeah. But then kind of like how Final Fantasy Tactics is, where you can, they're sprites, the characters are sprites, but they're put on a nice, very kind of basic 3D backdrop. Yeah. And there's just something about the games. Even still to this day, I have it for PSP. I actually imported Europe.
Like the PS1 version on the PSP, or did they make a UMD, a PSP version of it?
They actually made a UMD version.
I'll have to pick that up, because I don't know, for some reason my PSP seems to be a large system that I play, you know, RPGs on.
Yeah. Oh, that same here. I definitely say go for it. It's not in America. They didn't release it here, but they did release it in Europe. And I actually have that UMD because I was like, anytime this game is released, I'm going to buy it. I mean, it is one of those games that I have such a nostalgic memory of it. Just because of the characters and just everything about it, it really seemed kind of... What the hell? What just happened?
I was grabbing my my GameCube disc case that I keep all my UMDs in to
right.
Figure out... I couldn't remember the name. Let's see. I imported... Oh, yeah. Tales of Eternia. So I'm
at the yes, I did too.
For Breath of Fire 3.
I did too. I have Tales of Eternia right on my desk. I'm looking at it right now. So, good man. But if you're a fan of that style of RPG, like, just the entire atmosphere that Tales of Eternia has,
yeah.
Breath of Fire is sort of similar. It kind of has that very classic... a lot of people would say it's aged, but I really don't think so. I would honestly rather play something like Breath of the Fire 3 rather than... I know this is going to get me completely shot... But since I grew up playing Breath of Fire 3, I'd rather play that than something like Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
Like I really would, just because there's something about
yes,
it.
Yes, that whole nostalgia factor. And I don't know, there's also... Like when I play my RPGs, I don't know, this is something... I like the whole, like, kind of lighthearted and fantasy more aspect of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And we'll touch on the
yeah, absolutely.
To get to Final Fantasy, like... Because Final Fantasy VII and IX are really... of the recent ones are the only two that I played to completion, and I don't know, there's just something about the rest that didn't really draw me in. I don't know, maybe it's just because they were too realistic or what. I mean, that shouldn't be your
right.
point, but if you know what I'm talking about, 7 and 9.
Well, no, I
don't. The characters are much more kind of cartoony, and there's just something about them.
Well, it has a kind of a storybook mentality, yeah. And whenever you're kind of young and impressionable, and I mean, it does have an effect on you, much the same way that, like, if kids grow up reading, you know, C.S. Lewis, you know, I grew up reading Lord of the Rings and, like, The Hobbit, so that type of stuff, I've always had a fascination with it, because it captured my imagination
yeah.
from such a young age, but yeah, I totally know what you mean, it does have a very lighthearted feel, but there's something that you can't quite place about it. Whenever you start an RPG like that, you know, like, I wonder if you have the same thing. Something tells me that you do, but you know within the first 15 minutes if an RPG is going to be good or not.
Yeah, like, if you're going to be kind of invested in it and be like, man, I'm really enjoying this. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, but yeah, I would say probably, I would have to say it might be... Well, I know for a fact it's at least tied for my favorite RPG ever made is Breath of Fire 3.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to start off with that one just because there's just something so wholesome and classic about that game
yeah.
that I hope they release it on PlayStation Store.
Well,
I think they would.
They really need to start putting out more games in that because they could definitely bring in some extra revenue that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What's well, the same thing for me because... When I first, I mean, I was a Genesis kid growing up, and I don't know, I've probably mentioned this before, but when I was about 9 years old, after we had gotten our Genesis, you know, we had Sonic and fucking, like, the 7-Up Cool Spot game, which I
hell yeah.
the shit out of, and we moved to Africa, and so from there I kind of lagged behind until I picked up a PlayStation 1, pretty late in South Africa, or maybe, I don't remember, but anyways, we were visiting back in the U.S. and I picked up PlayStation 1, and one of the first two games I got was Wild Arms, and I don't know, there's just something about it, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I mean,
yes,
just
sir.
Everything about it, the atmosphere, the kind of Old West scenario to it, and the music to boot. I mean, the soundtrack to this day is probably still one of the greatest RPG soundtracks. Soundtracks, period.
Yeah, I fully agree because there's nothing, and there still is nothing like
yeah.
it. And it was very ballsy for them to set the game in kind of a Western influenced.
Yeah.
I mean, because at the time everyone was like, okay, we want to base this off Dungeons and Dragons,
yeah.
or we want to have something medieval, we want to have something science fiction, we want to, you know. But Wild West always seemed like it wouldn't work. I mean, if you even thought about, okay, if could I have some sort of fantastical story in a video game in the Wild West,
yeah.
you would think no.
Yeah.
I mean, it just wouldn't, it theoretically should not work. But yeah, something about Wild Arms. I just remember like the opening, probably the opening hour, they set up those characters so well. Yeah. Just
the
through
whole intertwining stories and you're playing the different characters. It was a really clever choice, I guess.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, but so that was one of the first, I'm really, because I had, you know, I had the Genesis. It was really, I think, the first RPG that I really played to completion, if not the first RPG I ever played. Because, I had friends with, like, Super Nintendo and stuff, but, it was definitely the first one I actually played all the way. And, I loved it.
Absolutely, yeah. And what do you think on the whole Wild Arms spectrum? What do you think of the other Wild Arms titles? Do you think that they capture that same essence, or do you think they kind of miss the boat?
I haven't delved into any of them. I for a while I was kind of on a strategy RPG kick, and I played a Jeanne d'Arc on the PSP, and I wanted to pick up the. I guess it was called like Wild Arms XF or something like that.
I was looking at that too. Yeah, I was a manager at GameStop at the time, and whenever we actually got that in, and that was one of those that I always wanted to put in my whole drawer. Like, because whenever you're an employee there, you can like put games aside if you know it might be rare or something like that. But I always looked at it and I was like, I have such good nostalgia, especially of the first one, but even of the second one. And real quick, which Wild Arms is on the PlayStation Network? Which one's on the store?
I bought it because I still have my disc, but I was like, it's going to be nice to just have it conveniently available digital, and I can just toss it over to my PSP. So I did that. I did buy that on the store. So the first one was the only one I really played, and I think my friend had the second one, and I saw him play some of it, and looked. I mean, they had the same setting and stuff. And I hear that
the second one's very good.
I hear
it's very, very
still. Across the entire Wild Arms game, they've got one of the most consistently good soundtracks. But I've heard mostly good things about all the Wild Arms games that have come out, which I guess is up to what, four?
Yes.
And then I guess the PSP kind of strategy one.
Right.
So I need to do that. Oh, God, if only I have more time.
that's half the battle. We'll get to that in the third segment. It seems like time is the one thing that we don't have enough of. Like the money's one thing, and the love of the genre is one thing, but the time, man, they're just a time sink. But probably one of my other favorite RPGs growing up, and it's easily the most epic in scale, in the fact that, it really feels like I'm on some sort of grand adventure that spans so much time and so much space, and is actually Star Ocean: The Second Story. And which is nice, because that's out on PSP as well. And that one actually is released here in America.
Yeah.
But that one is easily, if you would play one Star Ocean game, have it be number two. And it sounds kind of bizarre, because you would think, why should I play number one? Number one is very good, and I actually got... It's called The First Departure here in America. It's still very good, but number two is so much bigger, it's so much better, it's so much more grandiose in what it tries to do.
Yeah.
And it does it pretty well. Easily, it is the biggest... It has the biggest world map I can ever remember in a... a console RPG.
Wow.
I mean, it's big enough that you would go all the way around the world, in that great kind of, I'll relate it back to Final Fantasy VII, but in that kind of, there was those hidden areas in Final Fantasy VII to where there's that dude in the cave that whenever you go, if you have 15,555 fights, he'll give you an item.
Yeah.
Like that, that crazy ass guy.
Was it Final Fantasy VII or IX that you could do this pretty long-winded thing to get the Knights of the Round summon?
That was seven. Oh, seven. Yeah, and then you go onto the continent. You had to get the specific chocobo.
Right.
Yeah,
the gold.
Yeah, but in very much that same regard, there's a lot of mini games in a Star Ocean: The Second Story. And probably my favorite minigame ever, because I'm a big fan in RPGs. I don't know if you are, but of minigames, yeah. of like the little small stuff you can do. Yeah. Like in Breath of Fire 3, there's a great fishing minigame. But in Star Ocean: The Second Story, it has my favorite gaming, probably my favorite gaming minigame, which is Iron Chef.
Oh yes.
Like you literally have a 20-minute time limit, yes. and it's real. It's like literally 20 minutes. And you have all these recipes, and you kind of collect the recipes throughout the game. And I mean, whenever you cook food, you can cook food while you're adventuring and like help someone stats, or you know, oh, use the bread, get a stat boost or stat increase, or then you know, replenish your HP. So I mean, there is a tangible reason to have it in the game, but then you're actually thrust into an Iron Chef competition to where, okay. If you have enough of your ingredients, like, they give you all the ingredients, but you need the recipes. Like, the recipes you have found in the game up to that point can be used to create a meal.
Yeah.
And the meal, like, if you give it to the judges and they love the meal, depending on who likes it the best, you get a specific item. And there's, like, four judges.
That's
so
amazing.
It's really cool. It's cool enough that it's one of those games where I have a separate save file right before that, so I can replay that over and over and over. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll replay the Iron Chef minigame. You could do that, but then also there's some amazing strategy elements to Star Ocean later on. I mean, in the PlayStation 1 release, it was on the second disc, but there's like, you had to fortify a castle and all. Indeed. I mean, big stuff. I mean, it takes place, it's called Star Ocean, so I mean, it not only takes place in this medieval kind of atmosphere, but it has a very science fiction kick, where you actually get your spaceship called the Ragnarok, and you're flying around to other planets. And I mean, it was Mass Effect before Mass Effect was released, you know. It was one of those things that, you know, coupled with the fantastic music, and the only bad thing I can really say about it is some of the voice acting nowadays.
Oh, God.
So bad. So bad. But that's part of the charm. Like, that's also part of why I love it. Is because it wouldn't be Star Ocean without him saying, like, Wind Slash! Wind Slash! Or whatever he says, like, every time you do it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me, a while ago, me and my friend kind of just teamed up and just swapped off control. We were playing the single player of Baten Kaitos for the GameCube. Which was,
good
was a
choice.
Pretty good RPG,
yeah.
And it was like card battle based almost. It was pretty interesting. I enjoyed the battle system because you kind of had to
think
on your feet. But the voice acting in that was horrid.
It sounded like
everyone was talking through like a toilet paper roll. You were just like in a tunnel. It was really weird. But you know,
didn't they try to explain that, like, you're apparently some sort of god that's looking through some sort of, I think so,
yeah,
like,
you're an entity
looking through a cloudy version of, and that's why everyone sounds, I really just think they recorded it with bad audio quality, and then had to think of a reason.
Shoehorn this into it.
Yeah, exactly. Just say that you're a god, and the atmosphere makes the voices sound like that. Like, that's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, But yeah, so just quick touch on that. That was a pretty fun game.
Yes, Baten Kaitos.
I think pretty recently, because I know I mentioned that the PSP has been a pretty good system as far as RPGs go. And as far as other games, I mean, I know there are a lot of people would agree on, like, I guess Legend of Mana on the PS1, or was it?
Yes.
Yeah, so that, I mean, of course, I'm sure a lot of people love that, but on the PSP, and the first one I picked up on that, kind of on a whim, you know, I saw the case in a GameStop, and I picked it up, and you know, and it just looked like it was kind of a good, just old fashioned kind of fun RPG, and I bought it, and I'm really glad that I did, because that's exactly what I got. I mean, it was just, you know, kind of lighthearted, fun characters, generic storyline, but you know what? I fucking loved it. I loved all of it.
Yeah.
So
right.
If you're looking for a good RPG, and if you overlooked it because you thought it had a dumb name, don't. Because it's a really good game, and it's a strategy based. So when your battles are kind of fought on a grid, and it's really neat because you kind of had these team up maneuvers you could do. So like if I was two spots away from the enemy on the left, and one of my teammates was one spot away on the right. At that point, we could do, you know, from that specific configuration, we could do this awesome special move. So it has some really, really cool elements. So yeah, Pueblo Croix gets two thumbs up for me.
It was really good. And that, what we were kind of talking about before we started recording is, it was Pueblo Lacroix and Legend of Heroes that, or Legendary Heroes or whatever.
Is that the one where they're like, you know, there are different styles of martial arts that you can do?
No, that was a Kingdom of
Paradise. Right. Yeah, that's right. Never mind.
That one came out a few months.
Maybe, I don't know. You'll have to.
It was the very anime looking. It's the one where you could have a dog follow you around, and then the dog would have like a smiley face up above it.
Was the subtitle like something about Vermilion, a tear?
Tears of Vermilion. I think so. That was number two. Okay. I want to say. Yeah,
I remember seeing that, and I think it was I was gonna pick that up.
It was okay, but honestly, like, it was okay whenever it came out. But now that we have,
I think that's why I didn't pick it up, because I had heard this kind of, you know, offhanded, and this was from people that I know, you know, that I generally agree with. So I was like, I guess I can probably skip it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those kind of throwaway. Yeah, I didn't really connect with it in any one way. Yeah. It was just, this is an RPG.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I could think of whenever I was playing it.
Yeah.
Oh,
real quick back on Pueblo.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that even though it was kind of a goofy, lighthearted, I wouldn't say generic RPG, but it was, I don't know. But anyways, I think one of the reasons that I connected with it and that it was, you know, ended up loving it so much was that it had these really well-animated cutscenes. You know, from some professional studio, I don't know, but they were just really, it was a really nice addition to have these, you know, almost, kind of, they were almost like Professor Layton style, kind of think of it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that the character designs were very, I guess Professor Layton would be the one game that comes to mind now, but it seems like, it's the type of Saturday morning cartoon you would watch if you grew up in, like, Britain.
Yeah,
you know, it just seems like kind of an... I'm trying to think of a proper word, but yeah, you know what I mean. I'm just trying to explain it for people that may not have seen the screenshots, like kind of the Henry Hatsworth, Professor Layton, very acquired taste... Yeah. It's confident. Like, the art style is very confident, and the characters look good and they look intentional.
Yeah.
But it does look very fantastical. Kind of like Studio
Ghibli.
You know, Ghibli would make a video game, it would make Pueblo Lacroix.
Yeah. But, anyways, right, so, so what you were talking about, Legend of Heroes, right?
Yeah, Legend of Heroes was okay, but, now I'm looking through my list because I still have so many to think of, but I kind of want to not go. Okay, one we both have to touch on because I think it's absolutely pivotal and it gets tons of hype anyway, but I think Xenogears
is absolutely... You were talking about, like, the most epic and, you know, huge and spanning and long, you know, storyline. For me, I think that would have to be Xenogears. Yeah. So I remember just investing so much time into that and just being kind of amazed by the entire thing.
Man, they need to bring that out on PlayStation Network. Yeah. Like, there are so many good RPGs that if they bring them out to the PS3 store, it's done.
Yeah, I mean,
it would head over heels money.
It would make up for the lack of, you know, actual PS3 developed RPGs that, you know, that are out right now, which isn't that many, if any at all.
Right, and I do know what's going to happen is they are going to start releasing them, and they're going to start releasing them 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like it's going to be one of those things that they'll start doing it as a last resort whenever the PlayStation 3's on the way out. Which, I mean, I can kind of see that as a business model, but also I would love God, if they put Xenogears on the PlayStation Store right now. I mean, I'm so stoked that they put the first Suikoden on there. I mean, I got that one, and that's another series that if people are out there want a huge overarching, like, a complete saga of games, Suikoden is where it's at. Because Suikoden 1, 1 through, let's see, they did 1 through 5, and then they have Suikoden Tactics. But all of them, they're not about the same thing, but, I mean, they take place in the same general universe. So they're all connected in some way. And you can actually tell in the plot because some of the characters from, let's say, number 3 will be talked about number 1. Which is crazy. Yeah. Like, they've had this all planned out from the very beginning, and I'm like, holy crap, this is huge. But it's very politically based. The Suikoden series is very much politics. But I actually really enjoy that because a lot of the older RPGs, and especially the newer RPGs, actually, are going more of the sappy love story and the melodrama of, well, war, you have to sacrifice and all the, you know, kind of thumping their chest a little bit. But with Suikoden, it was more about the literal honor of being a good person. Like, yeah, war is hell, but how are we as people going to deal with it? And that's the type of stuff that I mean, this was huge back in, you know, 1997 or 8 when the first one came out, or 6 even, you know, 1996. So, I mean, this was stuff that's kind of ahead of its time, and it's aged really well. Yeah. And Suikoden 1 is on the PlayStation Store, and, I mean, people who just want a good classic RPG should definitely give it a shot, because I think they'll be surprised with how well the writing holds up and how well the entire package still comes together.
Yeah. Let's see. Another PSP RPG that I'd really like to mention, and that if you have a PSP and you're looking for a good RPG and you haven't heard of this, or maybe you haven't even picked it up, but Brave Story, and I think like the little tagline is New Traveler, so Brave Story is, it might be the best like original PSP RPG that I've played.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really good. I was really surprised by it, despite how excellent it was. It was published by, and I guess made by Exceed Games.
Mm-hmm. They actually did that Wild Arms game.
Yeah.
The Wild Arms XF.
Yeah, that's right. Wild Arms XF, that is the title. So I was really pleasantly surprised by it. I can't really get into it. It's just another one of those, you know, again, this kind of goes with the fact that I love, you know, Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy IX. You know, it's got those, you know, really interesting characters and this kind of really childlike fantasy feel, you know, just that I remember from being a kid. So
The one thing I remember from all of the news stories and stuff, and at first I didn't like what I saw, but then I haven't played it, but now I think I could actually go in with kind of a level head on my shoulders about it. And because the only thing I remember is with all the screenshots and stuff, whenever you would hit people, it would say stuff like kaplow and bam and like kind of like biff. Those old school like Batman sound effects. And at first I was like, what the hell is this? What is that? Like, they're blocking the action. But then now I think I would look at it and kind of enjoy it for it being kind of endearing. Cause apparently isn't it made after like a TV series or a TV series was made after that? Or
according to Wikipedia, it was loosely based on a manga called Brave Story.
Okay. Well, so, I mean, at least ties in. Like, it at least makes sense the reason why they would have sound effects after you would hit, you know, somebody. But, yeah, I mean, I remember whenever it first came out that a lot of the internet forums, like, exploded. It was kind of had kind of an underground following. Yeah. Like, the people that liked it really liked it.
Yeah.
But then everyone else was like, what is Brave Story? What is that? I don't know what this is. What? Well, yeah, exactly. Like, people would just base it off of that.
It's got a pretty
stuff,
badass, but, like, giant axe-swinging crocodile dude, though. So, that makes up
hell yeah.
The cat girl.
Absolutely. And speaking of, like, Kagra, I just have to make a mention of the Tales series, like Tales of Symphonia and Tales of
Like we mentioned, we both picked up Eternia on the PSP, which was pretty
cool. Yeah. Yes, that's the one thing, and that's the thing, Star Ocean has that same battle system.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, if you want to get, like, that's another reason why I love Star Ocean so much, is whenever you level up your characters like that, I mean, you're playing the game, you know, you have your special abilities put to your trigger buttons, and you're running, they have, like, well, yeah, Tails even has the bat, if you can handle Tails, voiceovers, you can handle Star Ocean's. Yeah. Because it's exactly the same kind of classical, like, yeah, we can do it together. Like that kind of, let's go, gang. You know, it has that mentality to it. But, yeah, I definitely recommend the Tales series. Any of them are solid. but let's see. I think now we have to talk about the Final Fantasies. Yeah. I mean, we kind of saved it for last because I think we're going to come to the heart of it right now. But, okay, your favorite, right now, for all the marbles, your favorite Final Fantasy.
Favorite Final Fantasy.
Your number one favorite.
Number one favorite, probably Final Fantasy IX.
Good choice.
Again, you know, it was just a really, you know, this incredible world, you know, fucking flying airships and boat ships and everything, and it was just, you know, this fantastic story, and great characters, really, you know, different and animated characters, and I just loved it, and some of it may have to do with just good memories, because playing it at my parents' house, we've got, the garage was, like, turned into another room, and
nice.
I played it, and so it's got, you know, the huge glass doors looking out, and I don't know, there's just something, because I started playing it over the winter, on, like, my winter
break, yeah.
And it was really making me nostalgic thinking about it. Just, you know, just sitting, you know, sitting on the really big comfy couch, like, you know, under a blanket, you know, with the snow outside, don't want to go outside, just sitting in there and just fucking, you know, just immersing myself in Final Fantasy IX. And I don't know, it was just something about it, and it just really, really stuck with me, so.
See, and even nowadays, it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, that game, the style and the art design in that game is just mind-blowing. Yeah. And I mean, I'm even a huge fan of how pixelated it looks. It's, like,
nothing wrong with, you know, some good old-fashioned, you know, I guess they didn't really use sprites, but, oh, there's just, again, a lot of it's the nostalgic factor, but yeah, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's aged incredibly well, and the reason why I love 9, because 9 is one of my favorites. It's in the top 3.
Yeah.
And I just love 9 because it went back to what made the game so freaking good in the first place. It went back to, okay, we do have the airships, we do have the crystals, we do have the mages, we do have, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I still think that Vivi is one of the best RPG characters ever, because he had such a tragic, like, oh my god, his story is heartbreaking.
Yeah,
like, and it was told so well. So incredibly well. They actually paced
it. The way they revealed it, it was just, yeah.
And it wasn't done in kind of what you would consider traditional Japanese storytelling fashion. Because a lot of the RPGs kind of go for a melodramatic type of, type of outburst of their story. Yeah. Like, oh, now here's the blah, 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 and the sweeping
music. Gonna be the end of the world.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's so big and so almost monotonous. But with Vivi, it was so subtle.
Yeah.
And you just, your heart broke. You're like, oh my god.
It was great because, I mean, it balanced. It managed to balance, like, all this fun, lighthearted stuff. Like, you know, Zidane the monkey boy swinging around. You know, with this really tragic story. And freaking, what's her name? Like, the chef. How do you even pronounce it? Coin?
I don't. Yeah, that,
you know,
that's as good
about.
As I would do. Yes, I do. The one with the tongue
sticking out.
Like the
wacky antics, and, you know, she could eat people and absorb their abilities, and so managed to have this really great balance between, you know, this really fun, lighthearted stuff and the characters having a good time with, you know, I mean, like you said, the really just kind of tragic and sad story of Vivi.
Oh, man. I mean, it is a classic game, and it's one of those that, I mean, we heard the battle music at the beginning of the episode.
Okay.
That's completely that's Final Fantasy. Like, to me, stuff like that is Final Fantasy. Not, we'll go into this in the third segment, but not the bullshit that we're seeing nowadays. But I would honestly say, and this might get me beat up, but my favorite Final Fantasy ever made has to be Final Fantasy XII. It seems like a weird. People are gonna be like, "What the hell? What the fuck?"
Again, internet hate machine. They're gonna be like, "Oh, you don't love Final Fantasy? IV wasn't your favorite? Final Fantasy VI? Oh, you suck. Go back and learn your roots." But no.
Yeah, exactly. And trust me, I have gone back to learn my roots because I mean that's what my DS is for. You know what I'm saying? With like Chrono Trigger and. Final Fantasy VI Advance and stuff like that. I mean, I've played them now. I've caught up with it because I do appreciate where I've come from. But something, Final Fantasy XII is. It's so hard to explain why it works, but it works on so many levels. And a lot of people will be like, "Well, it's just like Star Wars." And I was like, "Yep, last I checked, Star Wars was pretty fucking awesome." Like, you know, I just, you know, sure you have your Han Solo, you know, character with Balthier, and Fran is the animal sidekick, like the Chewbacca, and you have the sky pilot in Vaughn, who is Luke Skywalker, who always wanted to be a star pilot just like his dad, and then, yeah, I mean, it's literally, you know, Penelope or, but her name's not Penelope, it's like, it's something like that, though, but she's Princess Leia, and... You have Ash, and you have... I mean, it literally is Star Wars. If you look at the story, it's a rip-off of Star Wars. But then you have... probably my favorite character in RPGs ever has to be Bosh from Final Fantasy XII. And the reason why is he has ultimate character design because it was... Final Fantasy XII had the same character designer as Vagrant Story. So they had this very, like, royal, very kick-ass, you know, kind of flamboyant, but not overly ridiculous. I mean, you could tangibly see these people wearing this stuff. Right. Like, yeah, it makes sense that he only has one shoulder pad because of the giant weapon that he has to carry around. He wouldn't get the leverage if he had another one. I mean, like, the stuff, the reason why the costumes worked is because they were tangible. Like, they made sense. They didn't wear all these fucking belt buckles for no goddamn reason. Like, you know, the stuff made sense. But the story was so deep into politics and backstabbing and mutiny. And so there was always something going on. And it was one of those that the story kind of built on itself. That you had... Even Final Fantasy IX did this to a certain extent. Certain character development points would be separate from the story... But then, after you would, like, beat the game, you would find out that the story and that character development were intertwined the entire time. Like, something that would happen 30 hours in directly affected something that happened in the first cutscene. Like, it all comes together so well, and it tells just an elaborate, amazing story where it all kind of builds upon itself. And at the very end, it has this kind of perfect crescendo moment.
Yeah.
And... It also has a legitimate plot twist. Like, a plot twist that I did not see coming, and I can't remember the last time that happened in an RPG, where it wasn't, well, so-and-so's your father.
No!
You know, where it wasn't one of those, like, no, just can't be, but no. But it was something that was sort of minor. Well, I mean, it was a big deal, but it was just a character development. It was something that a character did not tell you. And then you found out later.
They only had one wing.
Yeah. And they were an angel. But with that being said, I do want to talk about Final Fantasy VII.
Cool.
I want to talk actually in great detail about Final Fantasy VII.
There's a lot that can be said about it and people's thoughts on it.
Because I think you're alongside me, but I adore Final Fantasy VII. And I know that's not the cool thing to do. The cool thing to do is to hate on it and be like, Advent Children is retarded. And some of it is, but, and you know, all of it's overplayed and you know, oh, if Aeris really died, why don't you give her a Phoenix down? Like, you know,
she,
it had...
Wait, what happened? Are you serious?
Oh.
No!
Oh, no! No! Spoilers. Spoiler alert. But I love Final Fantasy.
Yeah, it was absolutely.
It could just be nostalgia talking, but I don't think it speaks any less of the game, and especially of fans of the game, because a lot of fans of the game are getting bad raps on like places like NeoGAF and Penny Arcade. And, you know, quarter to three forums and stuff like that. Any fan of Final Fantasy VII, like, oh, it hasn't aged well at all.
Yeah.
Well, I'll beg to differ.
I'm 99% sure that, like, a lot of the people that will berate these people, these fans of Final Fantasy VII, are probably exactly the same, where, like, you know, they played Final Fantasy VII, they're like, man, this is fun. You know, oh, this game was awesome, and then maybe they went back and played the older ones on, like, Super Nintendo. And, you know, then their keyboard warriors kicked in, and they're like, oh, well, if you don't play the old ones, you're a piece of shit. And 7 was terrible. Yeah. Look what they made it 3D. Fuck that.
Back in my day. But, but yeah, that's true. I think it's, I mean, it is one of those things that if there's one thing to say about the Final Fantasy series in general, it's that each title is so different.
Yeah.
That everyone's going to have their favorite, and for valid reasons. I mean, and for absolutely valid reasons. And that's not to say that, well, no, that game was just complete garbage. Sure, it could be kind of a different mentality, but it would be kind of like saying, you know, you should like both Braid and Tetris because they're both puzzle games. Like, it doesn't quite work like that.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people love Final Fantasy VIII. I thought it was okay, but I didn't like stuff like the draw system or Junction, or just the mechanics of the game itself didn't click with me.
Yeah, but it all boils down to that, you know, and I know this is hard to believe, but sometimes different people feel different ways about certain games than you may.
That's ridiculous.
It's hard to grasp.
I'm gonna hang up on you.
Bye.
This has been Natural Gear. No, separate enough. But I'm just gonna use that as a segue now. Like every time we go cut to like a new scene, now that's what we have to do is make a sitcom. And every time it changes to like the outside exterior of the house,
every time the most minuscule stuff happens, like I go to put a new Reese's piece into my mouth.
it is so epic. But man, Final Fantasy VII, that literally, I remember the first time I saw it. The first kind of inkling that I was like kind of curious about it, it was in an issue of GamePro magazine, and there wasn't a preview, there wasn't like any hands-on, oh, this is gonna be awesome type of stuff. It was an advertisement, and it was, I remember the advertisement pretty vividly. It was all of the Mako reactor, or was it the Mako reactor? No, it was all of Midgar, actually. It was all of the entire city. And then it says, this should be to you what headlights are to a deer.
Yeah.
It said something similar to that.
That's awesome.
And then, it said that, and then just said Final Fantasy VII and gave the date. Yeah. And I was like, what the hell is that? Like, I looked at it and it looked like a cannon. And I was like, this is kind of cool. Like, I wonder what this is all about. And then I remember, you know, my dad used to be in the military, and we were on a Navy base. And they kind of had, they opened up kind of this technology cafe type thing. But this was back, you know, God, back in 97. So, I mean, whenever I say internet cafe, I mean, they had 3 computers and a beanbag chair.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it was pretty rudimentary. But we went in there, and I was like, yeah, this stuff's pretty cool. And I know my dad took me in there because he was like, hey, I heard they have some video games in there, and you might meet some cool people. And I was like, yeah, we can go in there and kind of see what's up. And then I went in there, and these 2 kids were playing Final Fantasy VII, and I guess it had literally just come out, like, a few days before. And they were playing it, and it was the opening ambush whenever the train was coming into the generator, in the generator station. Mm-hmm. And then Cloud, like, flips off of it, and Barrett cusses at him and is like, hey, you rascally rabbit, or whatever he says. And then you run and you start fighting, and I couldn't look away from the screen. I was like, what is this? Like, this is awesome. And I asked them what it was. I didn't know who they were. And whenever I was that young, I was kind of a shy kid. So, I mean, I just didn't go up and start talking to people. But I had to know. Yeah. I was like, dude, what are you playing? Like, this shit is awesome. And he was like, man, it's Final Fantasy VII. So-and-so told me about it, and I had to get it. And, you know, they were playing it on, like, a 30-inch TV. And back in the day, that's a huge TV. You know what I mean? So I was like, man, this is great. And I was just watching it, and I was just staring at it. I didn't talk to anyone else. I was just watching this game being played. And I remember, that summer, saving up for a PlayStation just to get that. I got the PlayStation, Tekken, Battle Arena Toshinden, and fucking Battle Arena Toshinden. But then I got Final Fantasy VII, and then I played that game so much.
I remember playing through the whole kind of sense of scale and wonderment associated with it. And I remember, I guess, after I beat could you go back after you beat the game and do the side quests?
No, you couldn't.
Towards the end of the game, maybe I held off going to fight the final boss.
There was a place, in the crater, in that last crater, there was one last save point, and it was like, if you save here, and if you walk through a certain point, you cannot turn back. So I know
where. Well, I remember save there and then going back and trying to fight I can't even remember what they're called.
Ruby and
Emerald
Weapon.
I remember fucking going over and over trying to beat that thing, and I don't think I ever did.
I beat Ruby Weapon,
Emerald Weapon. I think I'm the same here.
The way it was. I remember.
You mentioned this earlier that, when you first encounter these things, you were like, shit, this thing is huge and it's a badass. And nowadays it seems like with RPGs that, they try to make every enemy a huge fucking badass.
Yeah, which is dumb. Yeah. I completely agree. But there was something incredibly special about, fighting Ruby and Emerald Weapon. Because it was sort of this was a test of your skill.
Yeah,
this was the fight. Oh, much harder. Because, with the final boss, Cloud got Omnislash. Yeah. Just automatically. Like, you automatically got it somehow. And, but I remember with Ruby Weapon, it took me forever to figure out that the easiest way to fight that boss is to kill off two of your people and keep your strongest guy alive.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, Ruby doesn't do his, there's a special move he does, where it literally... But if only one person is alive, he never does that. Ever. So you can, if you just give yourself high potions and all these elixirs and stuff that, it takes a while. It honestly takes a good 45 minutes to do this one fight. What you mentioned earlier was Knights of the Round, doing the chocobo breeding. And I remember it was one of those things to where the first time I did it, I did not use a strategy guide.
Yeah.
So it took me forever. But then after that, that's kind of whenever places it was whenever GameSpot was still called videogames.com. And back whenever they had their, the facts, the user-created walkthroughs, and now there's game facts, and they have it for every game. But this Final Fantasy VII was the only one that had, three or four walkthroughs, and one of them was just for the Chocobo stuff. And then, so every, successive playthrough, I would get a fact and make sure I was doing it right.
Yeah.
But, there was just so much to love about Final Fantasy VII, and I think another one of my little favorite moments is some of the storylines of the characters could be completely missed. Like, you could completely miss Vincent's storyline, you could completely miss Yuffie's storyline, and you could completely miss, half of Aerith's storyline. Yeah. And then, of course, Zack, half the people that played the game didn't know who the fuck Zack was. They're like, what? There's a black-haired guy that gets shot in a truck? What happened? What? Like, who is this? And why do I go to his grave? And I don't know any of this. But there was a lot to discover. And even though my one complaint with the game right now is that the translation is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, if you go back and try to play it now, it is damn near unintelligible. Yeah. Like, you can't read what he's saying. And then half the time, you know, Barrett is censored, and the other half he's not.
I wonder how much of that has to do with the fact that I'm older now and know, or if it, like if somebody our age now, if somebody, like, you know, 24 years old, back when we were however old in, what, 90, when did it come out?
97? 98?
Well, whatever, yeah. Like, somebody back then, if they saw it, they were like, man, this is dumb writing. Or, you know, was it just our age?
Yeah.
Was
it? I've wondered that. Yeah. Is it more of, like, the generational gap, or is it more of, like, the gaming generational gap? Because I don't know if the writing was good for games at that time. Like, I know there was games like Baldur's Gate and Planescape Torment, but that was kind of a whole different deal. Yeah. That was, like, novels. Those were actually playable novels. Right. I mean, they were written by huge teams of people to have the continuity of a good book.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it was a completely different deal. But, yeah, as far as like the Japanese side of things go, I think I would say it was well written for the time, but I don't know. I'm kind of naive in that regard. Yeah, I think it is our age. Like, we kind of rose tinted glasses. We didn't know any better, you know. But that was part of the mystique.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't know any better. All this stuff was brand freaking new, and we're like, holy shit, I can race a motorcycle and hit people with a sword, and then I can go snowboarding, and then I can get a dolphin whistle. I remember all that, man. I remember, like,
it's a shame. Like, I don't think we've let it go to our heads, but I think a lot of people nowadays are like spoiled, or they've spoiled themselves, and they're like, oh no, only play games that are rated 98 and above on Metacritic, and anything else is shit.
Yeah. That's so true. Yeah. And that's actually a good point. Is there anything else you wanted to say about Final Fantasy VII? Because that's actually a good point into going into kind of where we see the genre of role-playing games going.
Yeah.
And then also, I can rant about how retarded I think the new Final Fantasy stuff is.
Yeah, no, I got nothing else to mention. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy, man, what you gonna do?
It's a classic for a reason. Yeah. I mean, it may start getting a Madden syndrome now, where, you know, it's a yearly installment, and we're gonna have four different side versions of this, and 12 of this, but
Final Fantasy Manager.
God. And it's all just, you don't even have, like, characters. It's just you manage all the equipment. But I will not lie. No matter what it is, every time I go to a website and I see something that says Final Fantasy, I click on it. Like, there's still part of me that I'm like, this might be awesome.
Yeah.
And then I click on it, and nowadays, it's never awesome. It is never, never, never awesome.
All right.
But,
bam into the break with a classy, nostalgic RPG tune, and then we'll be back.
Hey everybody, welcome back from break. This is the third and final segment. This is our last battle, so to speak. We have to equip all of our epic gear.
Yeah, we're putting it all on now. Man, I got my Magini materia.
Oh god damn it. You got your dong police baton. Absolutely.
Yeah, look out, absolutely. Keep your eyes open for Dong Police Chronicles coming out on the PlayStation 3 later this year, maybe.
No, okay, I will say that you did make a small little Dong Police movie. And I wonder if you can play it like through the PlayStation 3's browser.
You might be able to.
So essentially, you can get Dong Police on PlayStation 3.
It's just a video game.
Absolutely. It's all of like 7 seconds long. But it's some of the best 7 seconds you will ever have. Like, I'm going to put it in the notes because it's freaking
hilarious. Yeah, for anyone, just real quick, there's this website. I think it's called like Extra Nation or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But basically, it provides the tools to make your own kind of little movies, you know, using their pre-made characters, and then it'll, you know, you can add text, you can change the camera angles, add sound effects and animations to these characters, and just, you know, if you type in text, it'll speak it, you know, so it sounds like a fucking speaking spell, but, you know, it provides some pretty hilarious results, so.
And my favorite part of the Dong Police one has to be, because all it is your character says Dong Police, and then like this sound effect of war plays, and then it shows like a covered shot of the two characters, and then the guy that says Dong Police like puts it, you know, those, for the people listening, the old Subway commercials where they would say like $5 footlong, and then they would do the little arm motion.
Yeah, he does like a little I caught a fish this big motion.
So he's like, Dong Police. And then he puts his hands like shoulders width apart. That has to be the most massive dong. Like the fact that he made that, I laughed so hard. Oh my god. I think that's how we'll play the audio from that tape.
Awesome.
Like, after the ending music.
Yeah, we'll have to provide the link to the original comic as well if we didn't already.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But this third segment, we're going to kind of go into the future of the RPG genre and kind of where we see it's heading, and also some qualms we have. And at first, I want to go into the qualms. I just want to go straight into the hate machine. And I don't know about you. Like, okay, what is your take on where Final Fantasy is headed? Like, literally, like, your honest, complete opinion on stuff like, you know, the Final Fantasy, maybe even Kingdom Hearts, or anything, Lost Odyssey. I mean, kind of the whole current spectrum of the Japanese century.
Well, I'm gonna quote you on some things, because I know we were talking about this earlier on the platforms, but I mean, like I said, there's a reason that I really, and again, this is just me personally, but, you know, there's a reason that I just really connected with Final Fantasy 7 and 9. It is the kind of the more kind of lighthearted and cartoony characters. It's much more fantasy driven, and nowadays, and this is why I've been turned away from the rest of the Final Fantasies that I haven't played, which is 8, 10, you know, 10x2, 11 and 12, although I would like to play 12, but it's just because they've gone too realistic. I mean, they still have like the crazy characters and fantasy characters, but, you know, they're all like humanoid and, you know, correct proportions.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
has,
yeah.
Like, a wacky personality, well, at least as far as I know. And you know, and then there's all this flowing hair, and everyone's got fucking, like, Pete Wentz Fallout Boy hair, and, like, Asian pop star models, and I think it was you that said, like, doing all this Matrix shit now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. And, yeah, I do know exactly where you're coming from. Like, it seems that the older Final Fantasies didn't seem to take themselves seriously. Like, they knew they were still a game, first and foremost. They knew that they were still a source of entertainment that was supposed to be lighthearted and be escapist. Yeah. So, I mean, it did have the kind of a... we say lighthearted quite a bit, but it does kind of have that mentality. It could go over serious topics, but it would never turn on the melodrama.
Yeah.
It would never get maudlin and, like, force you to feel a certain way about something, or, you know, it wasn't really agenda-based,
I
guess.
And also, I mean, like, in 7 and... I don't know if the later ones do this, but, like, in 7 and 9, you'd have something like, you know, Vivi would trip and, like, fall on his face and skid, like, 10 feet and, you know, be like, oh, right. I tripped. And I don't know, I just can't see that kind of stuff happening in the way the approach they've taken on those later ones.
Yeah, they don't. There's a few actually very good characterizations in 12. I think the personalities of the people in 12 make the game so good. But it is much more of, like, a drama. Like a political drama, more so than like a big epic quest to go save the world. Like, it's more about, okay, these people during a situation, but
pretty Asian.
First off, exactly. Like, that's pretty much what Final Fantasy X was. I hated the hell out of that game, man. Yeah. I hated X. Like, people are gonna tell you to play X. I say avoid it. Like, your life fucking depends.
Walker Ball or fucking whatever.
Waka. Yeah, I think, honestly, it's kind of funny that you bring him up, because I think you would be personally offended by Waka. Simply because he is supposed to be kind of this, I am from the coast, man. Like, kind of this Rastafarian, like, yeah, no, sin, we play some Blitzball, yeah. Like, he has the worst. Well, yeah, I'm dead serious, too. You have to, after we get done, I'm going to send you a YouTube link, and you're going to shit yourself. Because he's like, no, we don't got to know that. Like, he almost sounds like little Jacob.
Yeah, from Grand Theft Auto. It's
more, he does have a certain cadence to his voice. And I mean, the voice actor's good, but it's just completely unnecessary. Yeah. And a lot of people would argue, well, it adds to the culture. He's from the island, and that's how they talk on the island. He's the only motherfucker that talks like that. No one else from that goddamn island talks like that. Nobody.
Everyone else on the island is like, man, this dude is weird.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, Waka, you need to stop that. And he's like, I don't know what you, Lord of mercy. Like, it's a weird ass, you know. I don't know. Can I please spoil Final Fantasy
X? That's fine, go for it.
What pissed me off to no end is the laziest storytelling you can ever do. You can ever, ever, ever do. I mean, this pissed off people back in the day whenever Dallas was on the air, like the Who Shot JR thing. You know, like, this has dated back to pissing people off back to, like, the 50s. Is, it was all a dream.
Oh, God, yeah.
Guess what happens in fucking Final Fantasy X? Well, but it puts a nice spin on it, Brian. Let me tell you what it does. You know Titus, the guy that looks like Meg Ryan, the one with the blonde hair and the... He's a ghost, and he's been dead the whole time, but he's been dreaming all of it. But it really happened, but he's been dreaming it.
He's the ghost.
Because he's a ghost.
He's been dreaming it.
Yeah, does that make a lick of goddamn sense? Like, no. But I spent goddamn 40 hours on that game. I spent 40 of my own hours on that game. I beat it. Walk a ball. That's what we're going to call it now. But it's, like, it was Miss Cleo playing soccer, and then it was Meg Ryan being a ghost, and then it was... There was only one good character in the entirety of the story, and that's because he never fucking talked. He never said a word. And it was a guy named Oren.
Yeah.
And he was like kind of he was almost a gatekeeper, so to speak. He was... The cool reveal was, though, that he was a ghost, too. But his reveal was actually cool because, kind of at the end of the game, you know, Yuna, the brown-haired chick that can summon things. At the end of the game, it's this really heartbreaking moment where she has to send all of her summons to heaven or whatever. And she, yeah, exactly. Like, it gets so ridiculous. And it's cool because this is actually the best reveal in the game because it doesn't hit you over the head with it. she's sending all of her summons away, and these are the summons that you work to get. So there is kind of a sad thing about, yeah, I remember getting Ifrit, and I remember getting Shiva, and yeah, you have to send them away. But as she's sending them away, they're kind of like disintegrating, and everyone looks over, and Oren starts disintegrating too.
Oh, God.
And you're like, oh shit, he was, yeah, I mean, it was a cool effect. Like, the way they did it, like, that was a great reveal. Yeah. Because they never hinted at it. They never did anything like that. But then you realized, okay, that's why he never really said much, is right. Because he was there, but he didn't have much to say. Because he knew that he wasn't much for the world. I mean, he wasn't long for that world. But, so it was a good reveal. But then it was a big melodramatic, like, Twilight type storytelling mechanism to where the guy that looks like Meg Ryan and Yuna are about to embrace and hug, but as he runs slow motion towards her, he goes through her body as he disintegrates, and it's grippingly like, horrible.
It sounds like something out of some movie where, like, Tom Hanks is dating a ghost or something.
That's it. That's absolutely true. And, like, yeah, it's like You've Got Mail, but for video games. It was fucking horrendous, and I hated every goddamn moment of it. And then, but now we go into fucking Final Fantasy 13, and they started showing, I mean, this is kind of a good thing that we're talking about it, because the demo just came out.
Real quick, I'd like to do, yeah. I found this post that Wes made earlier on the platformers. I'm going to do a dramatic reading of it. So here we go. Man, I wish Final Fantasy would start going more Final Fantasy 12 based instead of the weird J-pop Hot Topic characters doing flippies off everything. It's like a goddamn gymnast retreat. Nothing feels like it is weight, and there's only so many big badass monster battles until they stop becoming awesome. The reason older RPGs nailed the epic feeling is because there was pacing, and giant bosses were very few and far between. But anyways, I'll be right back. I have to go fly into the clouds and shoot my 12-barrel shotgun that is actually a sword at a dude in a trench coat who has flaming swords with 9 swords attached to it.
It's fucking true! It's completely true! Like, it is the dumbest. All of the characters look completely fucking retarded. Every single one of them. Like, I have the trailer. I have the high-def trailer. You can go get it on Xbox Live. Go download that shit and tell me if it makes a lick of goddamn sense. Like, all they name-drop everything. They're like, we're part of the Falcon generation, but what will the mercenary corporation of such and such believe? It doesn't matter because our religion of such and such. I'm like, just get a fucking, no, stop it. Like, none of it makes any sense because they're talking about shit I don't know about. They're name dropping stuff that doesn't exist yet. There's no we can't relate to it because we don't know what the fuck they're talking about. But it's supposed to be awesome. And yeah, man, they're doing a backflip and she has a judo kick and she kicks the robot in the face. And then she backflips.
Also a sword.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's that, but then it also has a reticule on it, and the sci-fi reticule goes and targets the big flaming demon that's coming out of it. I'm like, this is... Like, I'm going to have a heart attack.
You know what?
I'm going to have a heart attack watching this.
And I think that's it because... For a while, like, all the Final Fantasies were in these drastically different worlds, and now, I don't know, it just seems like they can all fit together.
Yeah, no, that's just, true, like, and that's a very good
point. I hope, you know, if they make another Final Fantasy after this, that the next one, maybe it'll be more in the style of 9 and 7, just because, I don't know, it'd be nice to see something different.
I do too, and so, I mean, just something that, like, this is where the rant's going to get completely... I'm going to offend a lot of people, but what pisses me off so much about the new shit, and it started with Advent Children, and I'll be the first to say, though, that I enjoy Advent Children as, like, popcorn action flick malarkey. Yeah. Like, because I know what it is. I'm not trying to look for a deeper meaning. I don't need, but as, like, ridiculous action scenes, cool. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever floats your boat. But it's a movie. It is a movie, and that's its job. Whenever you start putting that bullshit in all my video games to where I have to start watching this, and then whenever we start the gameplay, we don't get to do any of it.
Exactly, yeah.
No, don't do that shit. Like, don't show... Yeah, now you can walk and then shoot your gun 4 times. Like, no, that gun has 17 barrels on it, and I've... like...
And 18 belts.
Yeah, no, they have a fucking belt. Okay, for real. This is completely, I'm not exaggerating about this, because if you look at the new Kingdom Hearts stuff, like if you look at some of the Kingdom Hearts characters, they put Vivi in Kingdom Hearts.
What?
But no, no, no. Get this. Vivi in Kingdom Hearts has a zipper on his hat.
No.
On his fucking, like, on the top of the hat. He has a zipper on it. And then he has a zipper belt buckle. Like, his belt buckle has a zipper
what
on it.
What have you done?
Like, it's Vivi. It's Vivi. Don't mess with Vivi.
Oh my god, and all that is holy.
But I'll tell you what, it's Nomura. It's fucking Tetsuya Nomura. He's making 12 games, and they're all the same goddamn game. It's like, I'm gonna name this one Fabula Novus Crystallis. And I'm gonna name this one 807 over 47 minutes. He keeps, like, this is dumb. What are you doing? None of this relates to anything. He's like, I'm gonna make Final Fantasy 13. But then I'm gonna make Final Fantasy Versus 13. God. And then I'm gonna make a Final Fantasy
Versus 13
the City of Fighting game. No shit. It's ridiculous. All of this stuff, it doesn't mean anything anymore. Because it all relates to itself and it's all self-referential. And they all have, like, perfectly manicured fingernails. And they all, like, whenever they walk, they all have white hair. All of them. And they all look like Sephiroth. All of them. They all have fucking black trench coats. And they're all walking around slow motion. And then whenever they're not in slow motion, they do, like, some weird smirk thing. Like, I'm just gonna make up dialogue.
So, like,
the
totally ambiguous look on their face while they speak.
Well yeah, like, I shouldn't be bothered to be acting in this. Like, that type of, if I saw a live action movie where the actors look like that, I would demand my money back. Because they don't have any emotion. There's no emotional range in anything. And, like, okay, I am going to make up, right now, I'm just gonna ad-lib, and I'm gonna make up dialogue. And I can absolutely guarantee that this will be part of a Final Fantasy game at one point, if it continues on this trend. Alright, okay, so imagine me, or right now, kind of imagine this situation. There's a fire in the background.
It's raining, too.
Yeah, yeah, okay, it's raining, there's a fire in the background, there's a... Let's see, I have a posse with me. I have a posse of, like, four people. But the four people, they kind of look the same. But not really. Like, one of them has green on his, like, he'll have a headband, and it'll have some green neon on it, right? But it'll look kind of sci-fi, because it has some little digits that keep going and scrolling across some stuff. But the other guy, he'll have a handkerchief on, and sunglasses, but it's during the middle of the night. And then the fire's in the background.
And there's probably a tank, like, cut in half, upside down, smoldering.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean,
what do you think the fire how dare came you? From?
Yeah, how dare you? Like, how dare you think that that's not where the fire is coming from? And then, so I'm gonna be here, and this I'm gonna turn around, and the camera's gonna zoom in on, like, my ear, because they have ridiculous camera angles that don't make any sense as far as, like, filming
but
anything.
It's gonna be enough of the ear to see, like, your hair softly fall by it.
Yeah, my hair, and then a glistening in my eye from the fire, like the reflection of the fire. So it's supposed to be symbolizing that my soul is reaching out, and it's supposed to be, okay, and here's the dialogue. And I'm going to say in exactly a Final Fantasy voice. I don't know where they came from, but I will tell you one thing. They're never going to step foot in my village again. Thank you. And scene. Like... And that doesn't really mean anything. That doesn't mean anything. Like, I could be reading a James Joyce novel in that voice, and it's complete, you know, it's rhetoric. All I'm saying is hyperbole, yeah. And it's like, or whenever they go into that faux philosophical kind of like, well, if you believe in God, now's a good time to ask for his phone number. And you're like, what what does that mean? Like, what is that, what? They just start saying shit that's supposed to sound really badass and like, oh, well, the next time I see you, it may be in heaven, but whenever we meet, it'll be under better circumstances. And you're like, you think about it for a minute, and at first it sounds okay, but then you think about it and you're like, if they were both in heaven, that means they both died, so something went horribly wrong. That doesn't make sense. You know, like, it just it breaks apart. It folds under pressure. So, but there's no weight to it. And like, the thing that you read about how the epic scale of the older games, it absolutely was true because it was paced well. You started off with nothing. You started off like, hell, in Final Fantasy VII, you just wanted to get some fucking money. You were like, I'm just doing this for you because you're a friend of mine. I just want some money and I'm going to jump ship because I don't care about some bigger whatever.
Yeah, and now and, you're, you know, part of a fucking pirate brigade and you know, shit goes down.
And it's, you turn into like an acting troupe. I mean, like literally, which is awesome. So it's stuff that, I mean, it kind of connects to us because we do that stuff all the time. It would be kind of like saying, okay, what if Brian, whenever you're in, you know, the tribe, the, your parkour team, if something epic, like if literally you guys were, got done shooting, you know, being extras in a film, but then there was an accident on the film set and there was a fire. And the only people that could rescue those people were people with the agility enough to get through the burning building. Like, that makes sense because you have this, you have these, this skill set that would come in handy for a dramatic purpose. And that's kind of what happened, you know.
Cloud was part of
Soldier. And so he knew how to beat shit up. So then he was like, actually, these Shinra's doing the wrong thing. I should be able, I can help out. Like, I can actually help stop this. But now with this new stuff, everybody is everything. Like, it's a good thing I had that assassin training back when I learned how to knit. Yeah,
I learned expert chef.
This crab fondue is delicious. Like, yeah, all this shit, just everybody is everything, and it's like, it's a good thing I learned how to make that roller coaster in high school.
It's like, across the chasm.
It's like everyone's fucking MacGyver. It's like, it's a good thing I took that Eagle Scout training, and now I can drive this blimp. And you're like, what? They didn't teach you that in Eagle Scouts? Like, and that's another thing, since the stuff is far removed, like, since the Japanese culture is far removed from, like, English culture, they'll use stuff that is supposed to sound badass, but it's not really badass. It's like, get on my motorcycle, and... You're like, yeah, the motorcycle's cool, but then the motorcycle, like, even fucking Advent Children did this, the motorcycle opened up and it had, like, 9 swords. It's like, what is that? Who would have that in their motorcycle? Just like, what if you were at a stoplight? What if you were at a stoplight, right? Or, no, what if you had to hit a brake because you were in, like, rush hour traffic, and you hit the wrong button, and all those fucking swords flew out and started killing people? Like, what would happen? You would get arrested, and it wouldn't be good.
Yeah, if you're lucky, your friend might come down and be like, come on, we can escape in my blimp.
Yeah. I mean, because, come on now, Cid is a staple, but like in Final Fantasy VII, he owned it. Like, he made the Bronco. He made the tiny Bronco. He made that plane. That was his dream, to make a plane and to fly. Like, of course, that works. But then whenever you're like, well, our mercenary corporation, I can't even do it. Everybody's a goddamn mercenary corporation. Like, do you have to be a everybody is. Everybody, it's like, even little children now, they're mercenaries.
Yeah, you're totally right, man. I think the last couple of Final Fantasies can probably be equated to, you know, the last couple of years of Madden games.
It's just the same shit over and over. And like, and I'm gonna start hating on Kingdom Hearts in a minute because it's literally, I think Tetsuya Nomura and his team were like, well, we haven't fucked up Final Fantasy enough, so let's make a new series where we'll fuck up Disney. Yeah, it's like, don't mess with Disney, man. Disney gave me Bambi. It gave me The Little Mermaid. Like, I grew up with that shit, you know? Like, those are classic films, and now you're gonna put Ariel is gonna, like, her red hair is gonna be, like, there's gonna be fire in the background under the ocean. And, like, don't...
Our fucking fins will be, they'll have zippers on them.
And then, no, but every...
Instead
like,
of seashells covering her breasts, it'll just be like 18 belts.
It'll be swords.
covering belt swords.
Her bosoms. Yeah, the swords will have belt buckles on them. Just, it's so bad. Like, what are they doing?
What are you doing?
I just want to, like, I want to tour their studio and just tell them to stop it.
You should walk in with like, a huge fucking boombox pumping the Sephiroth movie, or music. Sephiroth! And just be like...
Well, no, pretty much it is a Sephiroth movie.
Right, yeah.
Like, all this is becoming is a Sephiroth movie to where... Oh, man, even just everything about it just pisses me off.
You dumb. Like,
it's dumb. Dumb is such a funny word. It's dumb. It's such a dumb... But, oh, my God.
Yeah, so... We'll see what happens.
After that... Yeah, I mean... And the thing is, I'm not optimistic about Final Fantasy XIII. Like, the only cool thing about Final Fantasy XIII thus far is the atmosphere that it is. Like, I would love to watch a movie that takes place in that area. Like... A sci-fi movie. I don't want to watch fucking a mercenary corporation shoot a big giant robot. And that's all that happens. That's all that happens in the demo. Is you fight a giant goddamn robot. And it's on top of a train. And you're moving through the train. And then it breaks through the train. And then it catches on fire. And then you backflip off of it. Like, it's all the same. We're going to write after this is done.
Who does that in real life?
Yeah, nobody. We are gonna write our own Final Fantasy after we're done with this. Like, and I think we should make it in that little movie maker thing.
I totally agree, yeah. Ugh.
Okay, so with that being said, the future of RPGs, whether it be Western RPGs, you know, like Dragon Age coming out, stuff like that. I know we haven't given a lot of love to the Western RPGs this time, but we can save that for a future episode. But this one's kind of focused more on the Japanese side of things. Where do you think the evolution is going to go for the Japanese role-playing game? Like, where do you see it kind of evolving to?
I other than having like a new setting, I don't really see it evolving a whole lot. I mean, I don't know, I feel like there's only so much you can do, but at the same time, they're, you know, huge JRPG fanboys. They like what they like, and I don't know. I mean, because we've got all these same studios that are churning out the games. You know, you've got Square, you know, you've got you know, whoever else who makes Wild Arms. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Oh man, I know Xseed produces it, but I don't know if they develop it as well or not. But people like Mistwalker as well, with like Blue Dragon. There you go. And then, like Mistwalker Studios with Blue Dragon and Lost Odyssey and Last Remnant.
Yeah.
And, no, Last Remnant wasn't. Was it?
I'm not sure. Oh. But if anything, I'd like to see, studios who don't normally delve into the RPG world, maybe either team up or, you know, or delve into it on their own. I don't know.
That is true. And I mean,
some fresh life breathed into it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think a good way of doing that is like, once again, going back on like the Breath of Fire thing, you know, that's Capcom's. That's Capcom's RPG. Yeah. And whenever you think Capcom, you don't think of Breath of Fire. You think of Street Fighter, you think of their action titles and things like that, but that's why it's something very special. And I do agree that we should get companies that don't normally make RPGs into making them. Like, I would honestly love to see an RPG from Kojima Productions. I would love to see one from Epic Games. I know they're very Western based and like Gears of War, but I would love to see an RPG by them, honest to God.
How often do you... you know, for like musicians, you know, they collaborate all the time. You know, they'll put out like, you know, a song, you know, featuring the both of them, or they both worked on it. I don't, how often does that happen in the gaming industry?
Not much. I mean, because it seems that the games industry is pretty inclusive in the fact that, no, this one's headed by Cliff Bleszinski, yeah, and this one's headed by Jade, yeah, exactly, Raymond. And this one, you know, you kind of have that one face to put onto a product, or like Ninja Gold with, I mean, well, Ninja Gold is actually one of the only examples I can think of with John Woo and Warren Spector. And
I don't know, I just,
but no, it does not happen.
It would be really interesting if you had, you know, freaking Bethesda Softworks team up with Valve.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, there's so much potential for that. I mean, it seems like the Japanese, development side of things does it a little bit, yeah, more, because that, you know, the Suda 51, Shinji Mikami and Hideo Kojima, like, they teamed up sort of. I can't even remember what they worked on. Like, I know they worked on a Project S, but I think that was a radio drama. Which is bizarre, but you know, I mean, so they do kind of have that mentality, like, this could be a good idea, but then it's also one of those things that kind of, but like, be, what if Stanley Kubrick directed a film with someone else? Like, I don't think it would happen, yeah, because the ego, you know, your ego kind of,
exactly,
gets in the way.
And I understand logistically, you know, it'd be really hard to get the teams to work together. Especially if you've got companies on, you know, opposite side of the, you know, the states, opposite side of the continent.
Right.
But, I don't know, it's just, I think it'd be really interesting if you had Square team up with Epic. I mean, I don't know. I mean, sure, you could, yeah, just pretty much throw out, you know, any big names and be like, man, that could be fucking awesome, but.
Yeah, I mean, it really could. And I think we may get to,
yeah,
that point.
So.
I don't think it'll be in the next few generations, but I do think we're going to get to a point to where we're all going to start realizing, hey, it'd be a lot cooler if we started making side projects with,
yeah,
each other. And, but as far as like the,
I guess BioWare kind of did it with the Sonic Chronicles game on DS.
That's true.
But, I mean,
that's a good
that
point.
That was more taking an existing IP and that was,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
Actually worked with Sega.
Yeah, BioWare's been pretty good about working with their own, or with separate IPs, like with Star Wars and, you know, things like that, in the Forgotten Realms for, you know, stuff like Baldur's Gate or Icewind Dale. But I think the only evolution that I can see from, like, Japanese role-playing games is in the way they tell their story.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, by them changing the way they tell their story, would they change the fact that they're Japanese role-playing games? Like, do you know what,
yeah,
I'm saying? Like, because people think of it like a staple, the 45-minute long cutscene of the, you know, androgynous, grumpy, white-haired Hot Topic employee walking through a subway station that's on fire. Everything's on fire. Everything's fucking on fire. But you know, I mean, that is a staple, but it's almost become a parody. And I think if they start taking, like, a Squaresoft started learning from someone like a Valve or a Blizzard, or if they start telling stories in a unique, interactive way, I think it would be pretty phenomenal. I mean, kind of a good example I can think of, it's not necessarily an RPG, but I do think there's a lot to learn from it, is Shadow of the Colossus. Mm. And because the way it tells its story is very subtle.
Yeah.
Like, extraordinarily subtle. And there's a few points.
I mean, it's up to you to kind of put the story together.
Right. And that's also great. Kind of why I think that's why I think we're so in love with the older games like Final Fantasy VII, is because since the translation was so bad, we almost did have to put,
yeah,
the story together ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of those, whenever you talk with fans of it, it's kind of like what is happening with the TV show Lost now, is people are like correlating, well, do you remember when so-and-so,
yeah,
said so-and-so? Do you think they meant that such-and-such? And, you know, you kind of, it's almost a conspiracy theory type situation where you put two and two together,
yeah,
and it just makes a big revelation. And like, oh my God, I had no idea that, you know, Hojo and Vincent's wife had an affair and they gave birth to Sephiroth. And that, oh, well, technically Vincent could be Sephiroth's dad. I mean, and that's true. That's like a legitimate right. thing. And people are reading into it like, no, this could happen. Like the timing, I mean, so Vincent could be Sephiroth's dad, right. you know, and you're like, that's fucking huge. Like, no one told you that, but that could be fucking mind blowing to think about. And, but, you know, things like that. But now it's all just spoon fed yeah. to you. Now there's no subtlety. There's no, but I think if they start looking at storytelling, like, I can't imagine a Japanese RPG with a storytelling of Half-Life 2.
Yeah, absolutely not.
I wish it would come true. Because God knows, I would go apeshit. Yeah. I mean, that's why I love Deus Ex so much, is because it essentially is an RPG told like Half-Life. Yeah. I mean, because it's told in first person, you're interacting, the same as System Shock, and, you know, I think that's kind of where the whole genre of RPGs, period, are heading, are more in the interactive storytelling way. But yeah, I honestly think the rudimentary Japanese RPGs are starting to get dead in the
Absolutely.
Water. Yeah. They're starting to get played out. They're starting to get old hat.
Yeah. Well, even with, you know, these companies that are trying to continue on their existing, you know, stories or existing IPs, and I don't know, it's just kind of, you know, beating it to death.
Yeah. I mean, because it's the same game. It's turning into the same game, and not only just for the Final Fantasy franchise, but for everything. I mean, they're going to change up a few things here and there, but then it just feels like you're playing the same exact game over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just kind of depressing, but hopefully there's going to be some sort of new genre of RPG. I think we're kind of on a verge of that, kind of on an evolution, because massively multiplayer games are taking off.
Yeah.
The rise of, like, downloadable content is taking off. Multi-tiered, you know, kind of multi-disc, very deep gameplay experience type games, or they want to be really cinematic, those are taking off. I think there's going to be something in the next, maybe even the next console generation. I don't think it'll be in this one because it's a little bit late in this one. But I think there will be kind of a new genre. And I think it'll have to do with role-playing games.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping so. I think it's about time. I think it's in due time, you know. I think we've earned it because we played the same goddamn game for 20 years. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited at the future of where the Japanese role-playing scene is going. I just don't necessarily want it to kind of repeat itself.
Yeah,
to just get completely played out. I mean, I think at the pace that it's going right now, it's going to turn in, Japanese role-playing games are going to go the way of the 2D fighter. To where it'll literally be non-existent for a decade. And like, where you're gonna have some things like, yeah, sure, Guilty Gear's awesome, but, not a lot of people play it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, yeah, sure, but then, you know, oh shit, Street Fighter 4 came out, and now Street Fighter 2 is the most, you know, played Xbox Live arcade game. You know, there's kind of a resurgence of 2D fighters 6 or 7 years down the line after they were the new shit back in like skating rinks, and then they went dead in the water, and then they're, you know, they came back with a vengeance. I think we're hitting our dead in the water phase.
Yeah. Well, but, especially, I know I mentioned this before, that there's really not a lot of RPGs on the PlayStation 3 right now. I don't know. So I'm looking forward to whenever it does start getting a whole bunch and see kind of what happens then, because it seems like we're kind of missing out on the usual influx of RPGs on quote-unquote current-gen consoles.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of it, since there's not a lot of exclusivity anymore.
Exactly.
It's, we're all kind of getting the same game. Like, oh, here's the newer Tales of Vesperia with a girl in a Catholic schoolgirl outfit. Like, they have that stuff. And, you know, the game's great, don't get me wrong. And, like, I'm glad people get to play stuff like Eternal Sonata or, you know, what have you, but I don't know. It's just, since it's all about getting it into as many gamers' hands as possible, I think we're starting to lose a bit of its charm to where I think the only real game right now that I could say harkens back to how it felt a decade ago to whenever you discover a game and you're like, this is awesome. This is going to stand the test of time. People are going to be talking about this years down the line. It's still going to have a very hardcore following is Valkyria Chronicles.
Yeah.
And because it's a very acquired taste, it's more, it's so special and there's something great about it. And there's nothing like it. So, and it is one of those that the fans of it are huge fans of it. But then everyone else is like, oh, what the fuck is that? I don't know what a Valkyria Chronicles is.
You know, World War II based J strategy RPG are bound to fail.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and you couldn't be further from the truth because it's been a big hit for Sega. But yeah, I mean, there's still hope. And I mean, stuff like Valkyria Chronicles kind of shows that. We just have to go about it a different direction. Exactly. We just have to breathe new life into it. Stop with the bullshit about, you know, like a guy with a feather boa, moonwalking and backflipping into a vat of like fire.
And then emerging with 8 fire swords.
Yeah. Like he'll come up out of the fire and the wings, like he'll have wings, but the wings are actually swords. You see what I'm saying? Like they're put together and then he can grab one from his wing. And then they'll like spread out and like ching, they'll make that sound effect, and then he'll fly through the air for no reason.
Yeah. So
like what's the deal with all these people flying, by the way? Like
everyone apparently has like Olympic level gymnastics training.
Oh gee, everybody. Like, oh my god, if I could do that, that's all I would do. Like I'd never do this podcast. I would be outside flipping on top of houses. Like could you literally imagine if anyone could ever do anything like that? Like you guys, you know, the tribe and the parkour guys, you guys are as close as it comes. And in my opinion, the stuff that you do is infinitely more badass. Yes. Because you have, you know, physics.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you have real, you know, realistic shit to We're deal with. So, yeah, since there's a law in place, since there is a law of physics in place, whenever you come really close to breaking it with like doing one-handed handstands on top of like chapels and shit, I'm like, whoa, that's awesome. Like this, you know, just stuff that shouldn't be able to be done, but you know, you push the human body to its limit and you can do amazing stuff. That's awesome. And like, I wish they would do that. Yeah. You know, I wish they would put that into a Final Fantasy. I wish that it was like a big struggle of like, we're going to fist fight. We're going to rough and tumble, you know, and then they kind of did that with Final Fantasy XII. Like the most amazing thing in Final Fantasy XII was the fact that the judges could wear big ass armor and they were like Darth Vader. Yes. That was it. I mean, they had you know, the spaceships, the airships. Right. I mean, it was kind of a return to form.
Yeah.
So that's why I do think that's actually why I liked it, because it got rid of all the fantastical bullshit of like, even Metal Gear Solid 4 did it.
Yeah.
And I love Metal Gear Solid 4, but the fucking Vamp versus Raiden fight, that pissed me off. I don't like that.
Yeah.
It was like two ballerinas fighting. Yeah.
So RPG developers out there, you know, stop fucking overcomplicating shit. Nobody needs 18 swords, and you don't need to do that stuff to make them seem badass. Just fucking go back to simpler days.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm telling you what, some of that cast, what was the big guy's name in Final Fantasy IX? Stern?
Stern, yeah, the knight guy. Or no, it was...
Because I know Garnet was a girl.
Oh, God. Come on.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of his name. But pretty badass.
Yeah.
Like, pretty badass. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you don't need to tell me that someone's badass in order for them to be badass. Let me make up my mind at who is badass. I mean, even so much so that I'm like, I know this isn't really an RPG, but alongside Metal Gear again, I was kind of getting sick and tired of hearing how badass Solid Snake was. I'm like, yeah, I know he's badass. Yeah. Like, I've played him through how many games now? Steiner. Steiner. I knew it was like Stern or Steiner. Yeah, but completely badass. Like, he was a big old boy, and he knew how to handle his shit. And that's what's badass. Like, a character that knows what he's up to. I mean, you know, that's why Vincent was originally pretty badass in Final Fantasy VII, because he had a story, and he didn't need to tell it. He didn't need to tell, well, I'm a vampire, and I was here because I was placed upon it. Like, he didn't go into some big-ass diatribe about how he got there. You just found it out, and then you're like, whoa, this guy's a badass. Like, you guys... Yeah, he got captured and put in here because he was too badass. Like, that is awesome. But nowadays, I have to know how badass someone is because they sparkle when they fly.
They're part of a badass mercenary corporation.
It's a good thing that we're all mercenaries and that we all knew how to knit these underwater baskets. They've come in incredibly handy during our adventure.
My God.
I think we should talk like this for the rest of the episode.
I agree.
This has been probably the greatest Nitro Beard in the history of ever.
Nitro Beard.
My God. Sephiroth!
Well, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it. I'm done.
Yeah.